Empires are not a modern invention. Long before borders were fixed, before constitutions or flags or elections, there were systems of power that organized people, extracted resources, controlled trade, and enforced hierarchy. Those systems rose, expanded, stabilized, and eventually declined. The names changed, the geography changed, the technology changed, the pattern did not. The Achaemenid Empire dominated much of the known world for a little more than two centuries. Its collapse was not sudden, and it was not caused by a single battle. It came when the size of the empire outgrew the cohesion holding it together. The Roman Empire, often treated as the definitive example of imperial longevity, maintained true hegemonic dominance for roughly 200 to 250 years. Long before its official fall, the internal structures that once sustained it had already weakened. The Han Dynasty lasted longer on the calendar, but its strength declined in stages, masked by continuity rather than renewed by adaptation. The Ottoman Empire survived for centuries, yet its period of unquestioned global relevance was far shorter than its formal existence suggests. Even the British Empire, the empire most frequently compared to modern America, exercised dominant global power for roughly 2 to 3 centuries before its contradictions caught up with it. Across cultures and centuries, the same pattern repeats. Empires rarely fall at their moment of maximum power. They begin to unravel when legitimacy erodes. They persist long after their original story no longer aligns with reality. Decline is rarely dramatic at first. It is gradual, uneven, and often denied by those living inside it. When scholars discuss the rise of the United States as a world power, most point to 1945. The end of the Second World War marks America's emergence as a military and economic giant. European empires weaken. Global institutions take shape around American leadership. The dollar becomes central to international trade. On paper, it makes sense to begin there. But 1945 marks the beginning of American strength, not the beginning of the American empire as it now exists. Empire is not defined by force alone. It requires legitimacy, narrative gravity, and the ability to draw people toward the system rather than simply dominate them. In 1945, the United States had unmatched industrial capacity and military reach, but it had not yet reconciled its internal contradictions. It was powerful, but it was not yet a global model in the way later generations would experience it. That shift begins in 1965. The mid-1960s represent a structural turning point in American history. The passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 did more than address domestic injustice. They quietly redefined the terms of American belonging at the exact moment the country already held global influence. This was historically unusual. Most empires expand outward first and deal with internal diversity later, often violently. The United States attempted something different. It rewrote its internal social contract while operating at the center of the global system. On paper, it committed itself to legal equality. In practice, it opened its doors to the world. From that point forward, America became something more than a powerful nation. It became a bellwether. Immigrants arrived not only for jobs, but for access to a system that promised mobility, stability, and opportunity. American universities became training grounds for global elites. American corporations shaped international markets. American culture saturated music, film, fashion, and language. The United States did not just exert power. It attracted belief. This is where the modern American empire truly begins. If 1965 is treated as the starting point, the timeline changes in meaningful ways. The late 1960s through the 70s mark a turbulent rise filled with resistance, protest, and institutional adjustment. The 1980s and 90s represent a period of peak alignment when economic dominance, cultural influence, and global authority reinforce one another. The early 2000s function as a plateau. The country remains powerful, but strain becomes visible beneath the surface. By the mid-2010s, erosion can no longer be ignored. Traditional empires operated in slow time. information moved gradually. Contradictions could be buried for generations. Collapse lagged reality. Modern empires do not operate under those conditions. Technology compresses everything. Information moves instantly. Hypocrisy is visible. Narrative control weakens. Legitimacy erodes faster than institutions can respond. Because of that compression, it is reasonable to question whether modern empires can last as long as those that came before them. If traditional empires maintain dominance for 2 to 3 centuries, a technologically saturated empire may only sustain legitimacy for 100 to 150 years. Measured from 1965, that places the United States near the end of its peak phase rather than at the beginning of decline. This distinction matters. Decline implies inevitability. Adjustment implies choice. What complicates the American case is that the transformation initiated in the 1960s was never fully resolved. Civil rights was not a moral reckoning. It was a political settlement. Integration was enforced through law, not embraced through consensus. The opposition to that shift did not disappear. It adapted, reorganized, and waited. Symbols remained. Narratives went underground. The conflict was deferred rather than confronted. Deferred reckonings do not dissolve. They accumulate pressure. Earlier empires benefited from time and distance. They could delay confrontation with their contradictions. The United States does not have that luxury. Technology removes the buffer. What was postponed for decades now unfolds in real time, in public, under constant scrutiny. This is not collapse. It is exposure. The question facing the country is not whether it still holds power. It does. The question is whether it can complete the social contract it partially signed in 1965, whether it can reconcile its internal identity with the reality it has already created. History shows that empires do not fail because they change. They fail because they refuse to. The mistake America made in the 1960s was not passing civil rights legislation. That work was necessary. The mistake was believing that legislation alone could resolve a conflict that had been centuries in the making. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965 were framed as moral victories, and in many respects, they were. They dismantled legal segregation. They ended explicit racial exclusion in immigration policy. They created pathways that had been deliberately closed for generations. They did not produce shared agreement about what America was becoming. They produced compliance, and there is a difference between the two. Civil rights did not arrive through national consensus. It came through protest, through court orders, through federal enforcement, through political pressure. A large part of the country did not agree with integration. They did not believe in it. They did not accept it as legitimate. They went along with it because fighting it became costly, not because the argument had been resolved. That matters. This is where the American story starts to split from the way it is usually told. Legally, the country moved forward. Psychologically, it stayed where it was. The laws changed. The beliefs underneath them did not. Instead of naming the shift clearly and decisively, the country tried to move past it quietly, assuming time would smooth the edges and soften resistance. It didn't. When societies go through real transformation, they usually mark it. They draw lines. They make clear what is no longer acceptable. They strip defeated ideas of their public power. America chose not to do that. Confederate symbols remained in public space. White supremacist ideology was never formally treated as incompatible with democracy. Extremist movements were allowed to rebrand themselves as heritage, tradition, or free expression. Avoidance replaced reckoning. For a while, that avoidance looked like stability. On the surface, the country appeared to be integrating. Schools desegregated, workplaces diversified, popular culture became more inclusive. But underneath that surface, resentment hardened. Opposition didn't disappear. It adapted. The conflict went quiet. For those who opposed integration, the 1960s were not a loss to be processed. They were an interruption to be endured. The strategy was waiting. Wait for the courts to change. Wait for politics to shift. Wait for demographics to slow. Wait for people to get tired. Over time, resistance stopped sounding explicit and started looking procedural. Policy replaced rhetoric, systems replaced slogans, and the country mistook that quiet for acceptance. Immigration followed a similar pattern. The 1965 reforms opened the door to the world, reshaping the demographic future of the United States. This change was celebrated by some and tolerated by others. But again, it was never fully named. America did not openly declare itself a permanent multi-ethnic democracy with shared ownership across racial and cultural lines. It allowed the transformation to unfold without articulating its meaning. This created a structural tension that could only remain hidden for so long. As decades passed, the effects of those decisions became unavoidable. Communities changed, cities diversified, economic centers shifted, political coalitions evolved. Yet the national story lagged behind reality. The United States continued to present itself as a country of opportunity without confronting how opportunity had been unevenly distributed. It celebrated progress without acknowledging the resistance that had never gone away. By refusing to complete the reckoning in the 1960s, America guaranteed it would face that reckoning later under far less favorable conditions. This is the context in which backlash should be understood, not as a sudden eruption of hostility, but as the resurfacing of a conflict that had never been resolved. The opposition to integration did not begin in the 21st century. It simply found new language, new strategies, and new political vehicles. For decades, this tension remained manageable because the symbols of power did not fully reflect the demographic reality of the country. That changed in 2008. The election of Barack Obama was not revolutionary in terms of policy. His administration governed largely within existing institutional frameworks. The significance of his presidency was symbolic. It represented the visible culmination of changes that had been unfolding since the 1960s. For many Americans, particularly those who had opposed or resisted integration, this moment shattered the illusion that the transformation was temporary. The idea that the country might revert, that demographic change could be stalled or reversed, became less plausible. What had been abstract became concrete. The reaction was not simply political, it was psychological. Status that had once been assumed as default now appeared contested. Cultural centrality felt threatened. Political dominance seemed uncertain. The sense of loss was not always articulated in racial terms, but it was rooted in identity. From this point forward, the deferred conflict entered a new phase. What had been managed quietly now demanded expression. Anger that had been contained began to surface openly. Narratives that had once been coded became explicit again. The opposition no longer waited, it mobilized. This pattern is not unique to the United States. Late-stage empires often experience a resurgence of restoration politics. Leaders emerge who promise to recover a lost past, to return the nation to an imagined moment of clarity and control. These movements are less about policy than about reassurance. They offer identity stability in a moment of rapid change. What makes the American case distinctive is the speed at which this reckoning has unfolded. Technology removed the buffer that earlier societies relied upon. Social media collapsed distance between grievance and amplification. Cable news turned conflict into constant spectacle. Information that once moved slowly now circulates instantly. The result is a reckoning unfolding in real time, without the gradual adjustment earlier empires experienced. This is not collapse, it is exposure. The unresolved agreement of the 1960s has reached its expiration date. The country is now being forced to confront questions it postponed for half a century. Who belongs? What symbols represent the nation? Which ideologies are incompatible with democratic life? What equality actually requires beyond law? These questions are no longer theoretical. They shape elections, policy debates, and social cohesion. They influence whether institutions are trusted or rejected. They determine whether legitimacy can be rebuilt or whether authority continues to erode. The central issue is not whether the United States made the wrong choice in 1965. It is whether, it is willing to finish the work it began then. Avoidance is no longer an option. The demographic reality exists. The global environment has changed. Technology ensures that contradictions are visible and contested. Empires can survive identity transformation if they name it, govern it, and legitimize it. They fail when they deny it. America stands at that threshold now, not because change happened, but because it was never fully acknowledged. Once the deferred conflict moved into the open, the country entered a period that felt chaotic, but was historically familiar. Empires that avoid reckoning during moments of transition often experience a surge of instability later, not because the system suddenly breaks, but because unresolved tensions finally collide with visibility. The United States reached that point in the years following the Obama presidency, when demographic reality, cultural change, and technological acceleration converged. For decades after 1965, the effects of integration and immigration unfolded gradually. Neighborhoods diversified. Workplaces changed. Cultural influence widened. These shifts were real, but they often remained localized or abstract, especially for those insulated from direct impact. As long as political leadership, corporate authority, and national symbolism remained largely unchanged, many Americans could maintain the belief that the transformation was limited or reversible. That belief did not survive sustained exposure. By the 2000s, demographic change was no longer something that could be ignored or framed as temporary. It showed up in schools, in media, in politics, and in everyday life. Cultural norms shifted more rapidly. Language evolved. Historical narratives were questioned more openly. The gap between the legal framework established in the 1960s and the lived reality of American inequality became harder to dismiss. Technology played a decisive role in accelerating this shift. Social media collapsed distance between individual experience and national conversation. Local grievances became visible at scale. Video removed the ability to deny what people were seeing. Stories that might once have been filtered or contextualized now circulated without mediation. The country was no longer negotiating change slowly. It was confronting it constantly. In this environment, identity became the primary fault line. Economic anxiety, cultural disorientation, and political distrust fused into something broader than policy disagreement. Many Americans were not simply unhappy with specific outcomes. They felt unmoored. The story they had inherited about who the country was and where they fit within it no longer aligned with what they were seeing around them. That dissonance demanded resolution. History shows that in moments like this, societies often turn toward restoration rather than adaptation. When the future feels unfamiliar, the past becomes attractive. Not as it was, but as it is remembered. Simplified, idealized, stripped of complexity. Restoration politics promise stability without requiring adjustment. They frame change as theft rather than transformation. This dynamic is not unique to the United States. It appears repeatedly in late-stage empires. Leaders emerge who speak less about governing forward and more about reclaiming what has supposedly been lost. They emphasize strength, order, and tradition. They appeal to identity rather than consensus. Their power comes not from offering solutions, but from validating grievance. The rise of Donald Trump should be understood within this context. His appeal was not primarily ideological. It was emotional. He spoke directly to a population that felt displaced by changes they did not choose and did not fully understand. His rhetoric offered clarity in a moment of confusion and permission in a moment of restraint. This does not mean the grievances were invented. It means they were activated. Trump's political success did not create the reckoning. The intensity of the response to his candidacy and presidency, both supportive and oppositional, reflected how deeply unresolved the underlying conflict had become. The country was no longer debating policy direction. It was struggling over identity itself. What made this phase particularly volatile was the absence of shared narrative authority. In earlier periods of American history, institutions such as media, education, and political parties played a stabilizing role. They shaped common frames of understanding and limited the range of acceptable discourse. By the late 2000s, that gatekeeping function had largely collapsed. Information flowed freely, but coherence did not. Different segments of the population inhabited entirely different realities, reinforced by algorithmic media environments that rewarded outrage, confirmation, and emotional engagement. Facts became contested. Motives were assumed. Trust eroded. In this environment, compromise became increasingly difficult, not because disagreement existed, but because shared reference points disappeared. This is a critical feature of modern empire decline that earlier societies did not face. The speed of information does not merely expose contradiction, it amplifies it. Conflict that once unfolded over decades now plays out in election cycles, news cycles, and viral moments. The psychological toll of constant exposure compounds stress and hardens positions. The United States entered what can best be described as an identity compression phase. Questions that might once have been addressed gradually were forced into immediate resolution. Who counts as American? What history should be honored? Which values are foundational and which are outdated? These questions moved from academic debate into daily life. Importantly, this reckoning was not driven solely by race. Race acted as a catalyst, but the conflict extended into broader concerns about globalization, economic precarity, cultural authority, and institutional trust. Many Americans experienced these changes as loss, even when they retained material stability. Loss of status, loss of predictability, and loss of narrative centrality can be destabilizing even in the absence of economic collapse. The political system struggled to respond effectively because it was built for slower transitions. Institutions designed to manage incremental change were overwhelmed by the pace and visibility of transformation. This created a feedback loop. Institutional paralysis fed public frustration. Public frustration further weakened institutional legitimacy. At this stage, the question facing the country was no longer whether change would occur. It already had. The question was how the system would absorb it. Empires that survive periods like this typically do so by redefining legitimacy. They articulate a new social contract that reflects current reality rather than past assumptions. They clarify boundaries. They address grievance without validating exclusion. They update institutions to match the environment in which they operate. Empires that fail instead retreat into nostalgia. They attempt to freeze identity at an earlier point. They confuse dominance with cohesion. They rely on coercion where legitimacy once sufficed. The United States has not yet chosen between these paths. What makes the current moment decisive is that the window for avoidance has closed. The demographic transformation initiated in the 1960s is complete. The technological environment is unforgiving. The global context is competitive. Other powers are watching not just America's strength, but its stability. This is not a question of whether America still possesses influence. It does. It remains economically powerful, militarily capable, and culturally present. The question is whether that power can be sustained without renewed legitimacy. Legitimacy cannot be restored through force. It cannot be manufactured through rhetoric alone. It requires alignment between a society's values, its institutions, and its lived reality. That alignment was postponed for decades. The cost of postponement is now due. The unrest, polarization, and instability of recent years should not be interpreted as signs of imminent collapse. They are signs of unresolved transition. The empire is not falling apart. It is being asked to decide what it is. Whether it can answer that question honestly will determine how long its influence endures. If the United States is to remain a durable global power, the path forward will not come from restoration or denial. It will come from adjustment. History is clear on this point. Empires do not survive by returning to an earlier version of themselves. They survive by renegotiating legitimacy in a way that aligns power with reality. The American challenge is not a lack of strength. Militarily, economically, and technologically, the country remains formidable. Its challenge is coherence. The social contract established in the mid-20th century no longer matches the demographic, cultural, and informational environment in which the nation operates. That gap between structure and reality is where instability grows. The transformation initiated in the 1960s changed who lived in the country, who participated in its economy, and who shaped its culture. What it did not change, at least not fully, was how the nation understood itself. The United States attempted to integrate diversity without explicitly redefining national identity. For a time, economic growth and global dominance masked that omission. Eventually, it could not. Adjustment now requires naming what was left implicit. A multiracial democracy cannot function indefinitely while treating its diversity as provisional. Belonging cannot be conditional without eroding trust. When large segments of the population feel tolerated rather than included, legitimacy weakens. At the same time, when others feel displaced without acknowledgement, resentment grows. Both dynamics are destabilizing. Completing the social contract does not mean erasing history or denying conflict. It means clarifying what the nation stands for and what it no longer accommodates. Every durable society establishes boundaries, not only geographic boundaries, but moral and ideological ones. Democracies cannot remain neutral toward movements that reject democracy itself. Earlier moments of transition required decisive cultural action. After the Second World War, many countries explicitly rejected fascism, not only legally, but symbolically. Flags were removed, organizations were banned, ideologies were delegitimized. The goal was not punishment alone, but clarity. America avoided that step during its own internal transformation, choosing instead to preserve continuity in the name of stability. That choice delayed conflict rather than resolving it. Adjustment today would require a different approach. It would involve openly affirming that the United States is a pluralistic society whose legitimacy rests on shared civic participation rather than racial or cultural hierarchy. It would require confronting symbols that continue to signal exclusion or nostalgia for an order that no longer exists. It would require aligning institutions with the reality of who the country already is. This does not mean suppressing disagreement. It means distinguishing between disagreement and rejection of democratic norms. Free expression is not incompatible with firm boundaries. In fact, boundaries are what allow pluralism to function. Without them, the loudest or most destabilizing voices dominate, and trust erodes further. Technology complicates this process, but it also makes it unavoidable. Information environments amplify conflict, but they also expose contradiction. Attempts to govern through ambiguity or delay are quickly undermined. Narratives collapse when they no longer reflect lived experience. In this environment, coherence becomes more important than control. The United States also faces a generational reality. Younger Americans are growing up in a country that already reflects the demographic future older generations feared or resisted. For them, diversity is not an abstract concept. It is normal. Their expectations of belonging differ accordingly. Institutions that fail to recognize this gap risk losing relevance altogether. Adjustment, then, is not simply a political task. It is an intergenerational one. The question is not whether the country will change, but whether its institutions will change fast enough to maintain legitimacy. Delay increases the likelihood that change occurs through disruption rather than design. None of this guarantees success. Adjustment is difficult. It requires leadership willing to speak plainly rather than nostalgically. It requires citizens willing to accept that the past cannot be restored in full. It requires acknowledging loss without framing it as theft. These are not easy conversations. They are, however, necessary ones. The alternative is decline through paralysis, not dramatic collapse, but slow erosion. Declining trust, increasing fragmentation, diminished influence abroad as internal conflict consumes attention and credibility. Empires that fail rarely fall because they lack resources. they fall because they cannot align power with purpose. The United States still has an opportunity to avoid that path. Its institutions remain adaptable. Its society remains dynamic. Its influence, though challenged, is not yet eclipsed. What remains uncertain is whether it can complete the transformation it began more than half a century ago. This moment is not a verdict, it is an inflection point. The choices made now will shape whether American power stabilizes at a lower but sustainable level or continues to fracture under unresolved tension. History does not demand perfection, it demands alignment. Empires that adjust endure longer than those that insist on returning to a past that no longer exists. The American Empire has reached the stage where adjustment is no longer optional. It is the condition for longevity. There is a temptation, especially in moments like this, to ask whether the United States is finished. History encourages that instinct. We like clean arcs, rise, peak, fall, beginning, middle, end. It makes the chaos easier to understand. But real societies do not move that cleanly, and neither do empires. They linger, they adjust, they fracture and reassemble, they survive longer than expected, and sometimes disappear faster than anyone thought possible. What makes the current American moment difficult to read is that it does not resemble the dramatic endings people associate with imperial collapse. There are no invading armies marching through capitals. There is no single economic implosion that settles the question. Daily life continues. Institutions still function, even when strained. Power still exists, even when contested. From the inside, it can feel as though nothing decisive is happening at all. And yet, something fundamental has shifted. The unresolved questions that were deferred in the 1960s are no longer abstract. They show up in how people relate to one another, how they interpret history, how they trust or distrust institutions, and how they imagine the future. These questions surface in elections, in classrooms, in courtrooms, and in families. They appear in arguments about symbols and language, but beneath those debates is a deeper uncertainty about shared meaning. This is what late adjustment looks like. It is not collapse. It is discomfort without resolution. The United States has reached a point where it can no longer rely on inertia. The assumptions that once held the system together are no longer universally shared. The idea that time alone would heal division has proven false. The belief that economic growth could substitute for moral clarity has worn thin. What remains is a choice that earlier generations postponed. That choice is not between past and future. The past cannot be restored in full, no matter how passionately some wish it could be. Nor is the choice between unity and division, because division already exists. The real choice is whether the country can articulate a coherent story that reflects who it has become rather than who it once was. Every empire that endures longer than expected does so by updating its sense of legitimacy. It accepts that power without meaning is unstable. It recognizes that authority cannot be sustained solely through force, wealth, or tradition. It understands that people must see themselves in the system for the system to hold. America's hesitation has never been about capability. It has been about acknowledgement. To fully name the transformation that began in the 1960s would require admitting that the old default assumptions no longer apply. It would require confronting the fact that equality was not simply granted, but resisted, and that resistance did not disappear when laws changed. It would require separating nostalgia from governance and memory from policy. It would require saying plainly that the nation's future depends on a version of belonging that is civic rather than racial, participatory rather than inherited. That is not an easy admission for any society, especially one that built much of its identity on continuity and exceptionalism. It is easier to argue about policy details than to confront foundational narratives. It is easier to blame individuals than to examine structures. It is easier to fight over symbols than to decide what those symbols should represent going forward. But difficulty does not eliminate necessity. The reckoning unfolding now is not evidence that the American experiment failed. It is evidence that it was incomplete. The tension visible today exists because the country attempted to move forward without fully resolving the terms of its own transformation. The bill for that delay has arrived. not as punishment, but as consequence. There is still room for adjustment. That window has not closed. Institutions can still evolve. Norms can still be renegotiated. Legitimacy can still be rebuilt, though not without discomfort and loss. What cannot happen is a return to ambiguity. The era of postponement has ended. History suggests that empires rarely fall because they ask hard questions. They fall because they refuse to answer them. They cling to versions of themselves that no longer match reality and mistake resistance for strength. They confuse silence with consent and dominance with cohesion. The American empire does not yet face an external force capable of replacing it outright. What it faces instead is an internal test of coherence. Whether it can align its power with a story that makes sense to the people living inside it, whether it can complete the social contract it began rewriting decades ago, whether it can move from tolerance to legitimacy, the outcome is not predetermined. It never is. What is clear is that the moment for deferral has passed. The reckoning that could have been handled quietly half a century ago is now public, accelerated, and unavoidable. The choice ahead is not about preserving power at all costs, but about deciding what kind of power is worth preserving. Empires that endure do so not because they are flawless, but because they are honest about who they are and willing to govern accordingly. Whether the United States can do that now will shape not only how long its influence lasts, but what that influence ultimately means. That is the question this moment asks, and it will not wait much longer for an answer.